Well, hello and welcome back to the Two Kinky Women podcast, where we dish about everything kink. I am your co-host, Midnight Lady, and my partner is Mistress Gabrielle.
Hi, welcome back, everybody. If you're new here, welcome. Hope you enjoy. And if you're not new here, welcome back. I'm so glad you guys are joining us again for another episode of our podcast. The Two Kinky Women are at it again. We've got a great, great topic today. Now, I say this all the time, but today, whoa, it is definitely a very, very intense topic. This is a warning right now for everybody who might be a little bit, shall we say, squicked by extreme things, because our episode today is all about edge play. Edge play on steroids.
Okay, because we did an edge play episode already.
That's right.
Where we talked about breath play, blood play, knife play, interrogation scenes, things like that. What we're talking about today is something that we haven't seen a lot of in dungeons, in public spaces, but I still think that it does go on, because in the research that we've done, we found significant, information that it's these types of play are done more in private settings. So what we're talking about today is extreme forms, extreme role play, such as a Nazi general or a Nazi soldier and a Jewish person, or a white master, black slave, or gun play, or rape play, or incest, things. So yes, if you are easily squicked or, trigger warning, we're going to also discuss like rape play and incest play. And so if those sorts of things do squick you or they upset you, we give you permission to skip this one.
However, this is an important part of what it is that we do. This is the type of play that some people would call highly offensive, and other people would say, somewhat offensive, but heavy duty psychologically, uplifting or cathartic, or any of those kinds of words that we use to describe things that are intense, extraordinarily intense. This is extraordinarily intense for a lot of reasons, one of which, of course, are the psychological aspects of it. We're talking here about the psychological impact of a societal taboo, or several societal taboos. And it's definitely not for everyone. But within the years of experience that I've had within the scene, I've come across it several times. I've never seen it in a public dungeon. I've never seen Nazi play in a public dungeon, which I think is a good thing. And I would suggest that that people do participate in this type of role play, but they don't do everything in public. For example, I would think that if I were to engage in this type of play, if I were so inclined, which I'm not, by the way, but if I were, I would leave the costumes at home. Okay. I would say that walking into an event space, an event play space, and if anyone has been to big events, and I know a lot of you have been, walking into dungeon space in full Nazi regalia, I think, is a bridge too far. Squicking an entire event, participants, might be a bit much.
Now, this is the one place where I have to disagree with you, because I feel that person, if that's their kink and that's what they want to do, and it is extreme, so we're recommending that you, if it for these very extreme, even just edge play, knife play, blood play, those also have to get okayed by the event coordinator or the DM.
Ah, I see what you're saying. Okay.
So even if the lesser extreme edge play things need to be, need to get a pass from the DM or the event coordinator, obviously these things that are even edgier and even more intense also need to get consent and okay from the event coordinator. And if the event coordinator or the DM says, yeah, that's fine, then I think they should be allowed to do it. Am I deeply offended by it? Of course. Would I leave the room? Of course. Because that's what we teach our listeners, that if you see something that upsets you, like breath play or knife play, fisting, you know, if that upsets you, you don't have a hissy fit in the middle of the dungeon. You bring it to the attention of the DM and let the DM decide.
Interesting, yeah.
How offensive, you know, is it?
I know that if it were my event, I would not want this to go on. Yes. So we've started off by going to the utmost of edge play on steroids, where nothing is off the table. But ML, tell us really, what is edge play on steroids? Can you describe it?
Well, Wikipedia says, edge play is a subjective term activity, sexually or mentally manipulative, that may challenge the conventional, sane, and consensual non-consent, extreme humiliation, interrogations, mind fucks, degradations, and more. So, but we also need to make a distinction between edge play and edging.
Ah.
Because some people do get that confused. They'll ask for edge play and think they're getting edging. Edging is where you take a man or a woman and you bring them almost to the point of orgasm and then back off.
Okay, totally different.
Totally different, okay, than edge play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is also where we're going to sound like a broken record. If you're going to engage in these types of extreme plays, communication, negotiation, and implied implicit consent is absolutely essential. You need to say, you know, like, I'm good for the rape play. Normally we don't call it rape play, but for this episode we're going to call it what it is. You know, we're going to call a spade rape. You know, I had breast surgery last year, but you can't touch my breasts, but the rest of me is fair game, you know. So you have to have that communication that says, don't, you know, don't mess with my breasts, but the rest of me is fair game, whatever, you know, like, if we're going to do this type of a scene, this, and then he'll say, oh, well, no, I need full access. I need all body access. Well, then those partners are not compatible.
Right.
Which is fine. Then you need to go and find a more compatible. And the implied or the implicit consent is not just consent, but you are very heartily consenting. Like, you are in sound mind and you know exactly what you think you're getting into. And all of its ramifications and, you know, the risk-aware consensual kink, then and only then is it safe to try these more extreme forms of edge play. So you'll be exploring the psychological impact of, say, societal taboos. That it's not for everyone.
No.
It is definitely not for everyone. Because this stuff can really be a mind fuck, because it's absolutely a lot of psychological, it's a lot of psychological, I'm going to say psychologicalness.
Yeah.
Because this is the 21st century. You can't really know what it was like between a German officer, a Nazi officer, and a Jewish survivor. You can't really know. So you have to base your role playing on the information readily available. You're not in a concentration camp. So the surroundings have to be made up in your head. And the feelings that would go along with this scene have to also be made up in your head. So there is a huge psychological component.
There really is. And there, excuse me, there can be consequences.
Yeah, so
too much. It can be consequences. So no question about it.
Yeah, so let's talk about this first one, this extreme role play where you take these societal taboos, such as a Nazi officer and a Jewish person, or white master and a black slave.
Right.
And how does one, you know, perpetrate this type of a scene? What would they do? Like, how would they go about it? Like, what would they need to do? Like, costumes? And I know we had spoke early in the episode about costumes. So without costumes, it would definitely be psychological.
Yes, absolutely, without a doubt. And I can see a scenario like this being played out more than likely in something like a scene, an interrogation. Okay, and with an interrogation, needless to say, the top can assume the role, the edge play role, the taboo role, various ones. Yeah, we could be a Nazi soldier. You could be a slave owner. You could be a rapist. You could be a person who is doing a home invasion. And there's another one that we can talk about, which is definitely, I would say, a taboo scenario, which is incest. So there is a lot of different ones that, a lot of different scenarios that we can include within this H play on steroids topic. And as you mentioned, the scenario of a Nazi officer and someone in someone who's been arrested by the Gestapo or something along those lines, and now we have a an interrogation, okay? And the person who is the top can also use various things. They don't have to be in costume, but they can use different tools. For example, you could use a gun in interrogation play. What kind of a gun are we talking about, however, when we're doing play? We don't want to be on the front page of the local newspaper tomorrow. So what are we talking about?
So the gun play is something that in my, 28 years, I never thought gun play was a thing. Like I just, but it apparently it is quite a thing. And it sounds exactly like what you'd think it would sound like, is involving the use of a gun. It might be used as a phallic object that you could put into a vagina or an anus, or use to simulate a blowjob. It can also be used like a prop in a scene, like being held to someone's head.
Oh, like
like an interrogation, right. Like you just mentioned.
Okay. Or Russian roulette.
Yes. Well, obviously, this goes without saying, but I'm going to say it.
Sure you are.
Usually, guns are unloaded during gameplay. Well, for the love of God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
No blanks.
Right.
Blanks can kill you just as much as a bullet can.
Right.
And it's fetish too far,
right?
As far as we are concerned. It's extremely unsafe. And there is one way to do it safely. And there's just one way to do it safely. If you have your bottom, your captive, you can take out the gun, you know, maybe it's a real gun, you take it out, and you could show them the bullets, you could make a big scene about putting the bullets into the gun, and, you know, like into the tick, tick, tick of the chamber, and then you blindfold them, take the bullets, all the bullets out or whatever, put the gun safely away in a lockbox, get out your toy gun, or, you know, they make guns are so realistic now that sometimes you can't tell the toy gun from the real thing.
Yes, unfortunately, that's true.
You know, so, and if you get one, like a snap gun, you put the snaps in and it goes, and it actually, it's a little tiny bit of gunpowder and you get the smell of gunpowder, you know, like, so you can be like, okay, tell me, you know, where are the other Jews hiding?
Right.
You know, where are they hiding?
Right.
And then go snap.
Right.
You know,
right.
And you smell a little bit of the tiny bit of the gunpowder, you know, that could be very mentally fucky.
Yes.
You know, that's absolutely a lot of fuckery there.
That's right. It really is. A lot of stuff can come from something like that.
So you can do that safely in only that way.
Right.
Is the only way, you know. And I say put it in a locked box and put the box in your, you know, like secure it afterwards.
Right.
Just
use your head, in other words, if you're going to do that.
Well, sometimes people
don't.
No
kidding. Sometimes people don't. It can really be emotionally damaging, this kind of thing. You know, interrogations are fun, though. They can really be a lot of fun. And if you want to add to the scenario of doing an interrogation, you can have another person come in for an interrogation. You can have another prisoner come in for an interrogation. You can have another interrogator come in. You're doing an awful lot of things within this particular scenario. And depending upon how far you want to take it, you can really take it pretty far.
Another thing that you could do with the interrogation is, which works wonderfully, but really just fucks them up completely. There was a scene in Game of Thrones when somebody was torturing somebody else, and they had a good guy come in and helped him escape.
Right.
Only to let him get so far to bring him right back.
Right.
So they really didn't let him escape.
Right.
They let him think he was escaping.
Right.
And so then being caught again and bringing him back was just completely decompensating for him.
So there's so many different scenarios. You can really use your imagination and have a lot of fun with this.
You could have, so he's tied to a chair and he's blindfolded, and you can be like, okay, I'm going to set you free, but don't tell him that I'm here. And I'm gonna,
right.
You know. And think that he's going to get out of this situation, and then you come back in,
right?
And you have to tie him up again.
You can have a lot of fun with it, particularly if you have a little penchant towards being dramatic, a little of the drama student thing going on over here. It can really be a lot of fun, but it can cause an emotional reaction that the top or the bottom really can't handle.
Yes, you know, and if we would like to switch to rape play, that is a perfect
example.
Yes.
Right. Rape play is exactly what it says, rape. Okay, so you know that you're safe. You know that the partner that you have, the top that you have, is a known person to you. You're not truly experiencing this horror. You're simulating the event and the activity. And it's a question of how safe do you feel within that environment? Who's asked for it? Has the top asked for it? For the bottom? Has the bottom asked for it? How far do you want to go with it? Let's go back to another word that we use all the time, negotiation. I think you've really got to talk about this kind of stuff before you do it. Absolutely. And you've got to talk about what the reactions are going to be from the other people in the room if you're playing in public. Okay. I as I said before, as you repeated, I give a party. I have, say, 15, 18 people in the house. We're downstairs, we're upstairs, whatever. I really do not want a male or a female coming into my home dressed in full costume Nazi regalia. I just really do not want that in my house. So I would say leave the costumes at home if you're playing in public, because there's an emotion reaction, not just from the people who are in the scene, but people who have the potential of watching it. Okay. The upshot of it can be very, very difficult. And of course, where I'm going to take this also is the catharsis. Using the word catharsis in a scene like this means that you just very well might be using the scene as therapy. Mm-hmm. And that's, for us, a big no-no. And why is it a big no-no? Because we're not equipped to handle the kinds of things that go on when you have emotional reactions. When somebody freaks out or dissociates or
triggers a flashback,
any of these kinds of things. And now your scene is become therapeutic, and you're in no condition, you're not in any position to be able to handle something like that.
And you're not trained.
Now, if you're a trained therapist or something along those lines, maybe that's a little bit different. But I would be somewhat skeptical of playing with people who are trained psychologists or psychiatrists who say that this kind of thing is okay. I don't think it's okay, and I don't think anybody who is in that field would think that it's okay as well to be using the scene as therapy. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about doing these edge play scenes. I'm talking about thinking you are using the scene as therapy, and then somehow you can be cured of some kind of awful, you know, memory or PTSD type reaction from this kind of stuff. It's intense. There's no question about it. Someone who has been raped and is now doing a rape scene where they have absolutely no control and no safe word or anything along those lines. What's wrong in that scenario? Never play without a safe word.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So you may be intrigued and say, you know, I do want to play with it. But if it goes too far, I want to be able to stop it. So you're never going to play with somebody who says, well, you can't stop it because, you know, I'm your master. This is my scene. This is what I want to do. And it's going to go as far as I want it to go. Well, you know what to do with somebody like that. You don't play with them. You just don't. You really don't.
They're unsafe.
They are unsafe. But rape play can be incredibly intense, particularly in the environment of a home invasion, where a person who is, just...
masked.
Yeah, exactly. Comes in through the window or, you know, breaks down the door or whatever the case may be. I mean, somebody watching something along these lines could think that it is really happening in real time. I think a lot of this kind of edge play on steroids, or, you know, what we like to call exploring the societal taboos, I feel, but this again, personal opinion, that it belongs in private play. All right. Or in a very small environment. In other words, people who know each other, maybe an extended leather family or something along those lines. Because the possibilities of damage, I think, are way too great. And as a non-trained, I mean, I am a trained crisis counselor, but I am not a shrink and I'm not a social worker. Okay. I'm not a therapist. And I would never want to be put into that position. And I wouldn't want anybody I was playing with to be put in that position either. I think there's really serious stuff to talk about in regards to doing this kind of thing. I've had requests in the past from Black men, okay, to do a slave and mistress scenario.
Wow.
Now, we're not talking about a slave and mistress scenario as we generally speak in the BDSM world. We're talking about actually appearing at an event, Okay. Dressed to the nines. Think Scarlett O'Hara. All right. And Scarlett is now leading a half-naked black male into the into the dungeon space. Okay, he's half naked. He's wearing bottoms that are very ragged and cut up and things along those lines. He has nothing on the top. He's draped with chains. His hands are chained together in the front of him. You can see when he turns around, or if you're behind him, that he has several marks on his back. So it's very obvious this is the mistress of the manor, and this is her slave, okay? This scenario, needless to say, would be appeal to a lot of people who have a little of the drama thing going on, because you can really, really go to town with something like this. I mean, you really can make it feel like it is absolutely happening. Now, if the bottom, in this case, the young black male, wants this and requests it, and it was requested of me, you can do it or not. That depends. But for God's sakes, please, negotiation, implicit consent. Absolutely. This is extraordinarily important, because anything can happen. People are complex. We're complicated people. Humans, right?
So you're in the dungeon.
Yeah.
A Saturday night at an event or something, and you see something like that. We always counsel, if that offends you, you don't have to watch it.
Right.
You don't have to see it.
Right.
You don't have to participate in it. If you feel that it is somehow a danger, that person is being whipped to within an inch of his life, well, then, yes, you alert the DM, and the DM will decide if, you know, if the scene is turning on a dangerous turn. You don't have the right to go up to them and start judging them or shaming them, or because we all have different kinks. You know, kink is what you make it. It's what you like. You know, there's one guy that I saw year after year after year. His kink was wearing a pair of pantyhose. We called him Dildo Man. Wearing a pair of pantyhose, sucking on a dildo. And that's it. That's all he would ever do. And that was his kink.
Mm-hmm.
So kink is what you make it. It's what appeals to you. And if that's what your thing is, those radical forms of role play, I think you should be allowed to do it as long as you're being safe. But see, how can you even tell if you're being safe, psychologically safe? That you can't judge the way you could stop a scene because his back is all bloodied. You know, something to that effect. So it's a very slippery slope.
And sometimes, I'll be absolutely honest with you, sometimes these scenarios belong in one place and one place only, which is in drama class. And that's it, you know. Don't take it out of your experimenting with your acting skills. No, seriously, it just seems to me that the best kinds of edge play along this environment would be to do it privately. Mm. That's just my gut feeling about that, because, I mean, I don't know. I just think when you take things a little bit too far, like, for example, do you remember how we used to talk a lot about doing scene type things, doing activities in front of people who are not sceners? Okay. Public scenes. I'm not talking about a public dungeon or an event. I'm talking about walking down, 37th Street and 6th Avenue, and you've got your person on a leash, and every now and then you take out a whip or something like that and give them a good smack. Not talking about that, but talking about it the same thing. Have the people in that dungeon, they are now involved in your scene. Is that fair? Is that fair?
Yeah.
Is that fair to do? Okay, you're involving people who have nothing whatsoever to do with you, and you're seen in it because you just did what you did.
Yeah. Right. You involved everyone.
You involved everyone.
So you could, so that it's definitely going to be psychological, because you could have that role play scene going on and nobody will know the roles that you're playing. They'll see you playing, but they won't know what the roles are. So that would be less offensive. So if we really wanted to do that type of scene in public, you could do it on a psychological level, which would allow for that exhibitionism. Maybe you want to be an exhibitionist with that. Without the costumes. Leave the costumes at home for that kind of a scene.
I would suggest it because I don't
think
it's
the way to do it.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of involving people who have nothing whatsoever to do with your scene in your scene. And sometimes that's what's required when you do this kind of edge play on steroids. The other thing about it as well is these kinds of things can be done in an event. And I know people who run events who would say, sure, you can do this, but we are going to put you in an environment where it is, you're not going to be exposed to everybody else who's in the dungeon. In other words, they set up rooms within the dungeon. They drape, pipe and drape a bunch of little spaces or whatever. And I would say
intimate settings.
I would say that kind of stuff maybe belongs within that type of an environment. And maybe as well, using the power of a written sign, which is outside, don't come in unless you are prepared to be...
Trigger warning.
A trigger warning, exactly. Put a sign up outside. I think that's okay. I really do.
Yes, because then the person knows what they're getting into
right
before they even go in.
Right, absolutely.
And they can choose.
Right.
Well, you know what? That won't work for me. I think we're going to skip this room.
Exactly. Now, extreme forms of medical play, of blood play, things along those lines are done.
Using the gun as a phallic object.
Yeah. Now, this can be done inside a draped space that is private to you and anybody who wants to join, but they know what's going on before they walk in the door. Okay. Yeah, I think that's really good. I'm just saying that there's such a fine line in the stuff that we do, what it is that we do, when we talk about getting to the psychological foundations of a lot of the stuff that we like to do, that we want to do, that we have fun doing, etc. Yeah, everything that we do has psychological impacts, and everything that we do has some kind of a reckoning. For example, your past or what you perceive to have been your past, or a scenario that you fantasize about. All of these things are fair game, but again, you know, I hate to keep harping on this. Well, no, I don't really hate to keep harping on it. But it's so critical that if you need mental help, if you need therapy, and you know what we say, we've done this several times, I need a therapist and so do you. Go get therapy if that's what it is that you need to be able to deal with this kind of stuff. I mean, if you're the grandchild of a Holocaust survivor, we know that there are lots of things going on in your head. Lots of things came from your parents. Lots of things came from your grandparents, okay? There's a lot of stuff happening. You probably did not have the most, shall we say, stable of childhoods. And there's a lot of stuff that comes up. I would say deal with this stuff in a therapeutic environment, not in the dungeon.
In the scene.
Yeah, not in the dungeon.
Interestingly enough, though, this is also something that squicks me. Absolutely, I'm going to say it because I'm allowed to, because it's my podcast with you. And I'm allowed to. The whole littles thing.
Ah, incest.
And it squicks me to no end. So, you know, could you, you know, expand a little bit on the incest play? And that's a thing. Incest play is a thing.
Well, it really is a thing. And it really is a thing without even calling it incest play, because we have a segment of the BDSM population, or the master-slave population, or the MS population. Oh, that's what I said, master-slave. Or any of the other kinds of populations within our subculture that like to present as children. They really, really like it. And in fact, some of them like it to such an extent that given their life circumstances, they will dress like the children that they are emulating. And they dress that way everywhere they go. And some people can do that. Other mm-hmm. people can't do that. So the thing with littles is there's an implied aspect. There's an implied, shall we say, incestual aspect to littles, because littles have mommies and daddies. Mm. All right?
And uncles
and babysitters.
And aunties and brothers.
Right. Okay. And so there is implied incestual aspect to the whole thing about littles. And that's what some people, such as yourself perhaps, and others, just don't care for. It's a bit too much, a bridge too far. So when we talk about edge play on steroids, when we play with societal taboos, nothing is off the table? Well, yes, some things are off the table. If you don't particularly care for it, walk away. That's for sure. And if you don't want to do it, walk away. That's for sure as well. But if you are involved in it, okay, and you are littles, or you are a family of littles, three littles and a mommy and daddy, and there are these kinds of scenarios. I mean, incest is the next step. A lot of people are squicked. A lot of people are not squicked, okay? But being squicked or not, that's up to you. The thing is, this is an accepted part of our scene. It is.
And it is making a huge burst into the vendor space.
It really is, isn't it? When you go to an event, yeah.
The last event I went to, there had to have been at least 6 vendors there that were selling nothing but littles things, littles clothing, adult size kids clothes. They had a Build-A-Bear type of scenario where you go and you pick out an animal, a stuffy, and you start with the skin, you know, and then they put a little heart in it, and then they put the stuffing in, and then you buy little clothes for the little stuffy. And I was just like, okay, this is, and there was like 6 vendors full of littles things, adult size pacifiers and adult size diapers and onesies and jumpers. And
we know adult men who are very into this. Adult men who dress as a little girl.
Yes.
Adult retired men who don't have to worry about a job or being outed, walk around in a little girl's outfit 24/7. Okay. Here's another example of exposing people who have no interest in your scene. When you go to the ShopRite and in your little girly outfit, you know, you're a 75-year-old man and you're wearing your little girly outfit, okay, with your little shoes and the little ruffled socks and all that kind of stuff. And it's done. It is
There's
done.
A guy on YouTube that I watch for laughs, and he takes all the different pictures that people snap at Walmart of the people dressed like a Pikachu.
Right.
Or dressed, right. You know, just Walmart people.
You see them at Walmart, don't you?
For some reason, they congregate at Walmart. Why do you think I will never go to a Walmart on the weekend?
Yeah, it's true. It really is true. It's very, very interesting. That whole Littles thing is very interesting to me. Again, I'm just going to emphasize, and maybe I'm going to sound like a broken record, but if you're into this kind of thing because you've got to recreate a childhood that was absolutely horrifying, so now you're going to recreate it on your terms, and it's going to be what it is you want, I think you need more than a top being daddy or mommy. I think you need to figure out what the hell is going on with you. I really do. I am not saying Littles play is bad news. I'm not saying that. It can be very endearing and very sweet. I do tea parties. I've had quite a few people, men and women, dressed as little boys and little girls coming to have tea with the grown-ups at the tea party. And it's very endearing. It's very cute. They're adorable. They talk like a five-year-old or a three-year-old or whatever the case may be. They carry their little stuffed animals. They wear their finest little, you know, fancy dress to go to the tea party. It's very endearing. It's very cute. And they behave. Because if they don't behave, they get thrown out of the tea party. So they always do behave. But in any event, it can be very charming.
This is where the disconnect for me happens.
Yeah.
I can see all of that is very, very cute.
Yeah.
Very charming. I get it. Totally. Where it disconnects for me is the... where I see them playing in the dungeon and I see sexual play in the dungeon.
Right.
And the adult is dressed like a child and she's calling him daddy.
Right.
And he's doing things that daddy shouldn't be doing to right. their little girls.
Right.
That's what I'm, that's right, where exactly. it squicks me.
Right. Right.
And they call them daddy.
They sure do.
You know, and that squicks me. That's where it changes for me. I'm agreeing with you. We're not saying you can't do you.
Right.
As, you know, as they say, you do you, boo.
Right.
And if that makes you happy, then go for it. Do whatever makes your bing button go bing.
Right.
You know, we just included it because there is that disconnect. There is that crossing of the line. You know, if you just wanted to be a little and not have a sexual component to it. For me, the sexual component is where that draws the line.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
For some, if I were, let's say, a young Jewish person. That disconnect would be seeing the guy show up in the Nazi uniform,
mm-hmm.
you know, because
mm-hmm.
that's too close to home for mm-hmm. me. So you have to decide, you know, how much are you willing to withstand? How much of that weird shit-o-meter, you know, we have what's called the weird shit-o-meter.
Yeah, we do.
'Cause we've seen a lot of shit.
Oh, yeah.
And so our weird shit-o-meter is relatively high because it would take a lot for us to be like, wow, that's some weird shit.
That's right.
You know.
We've been around.
We've been around the block a couple
yeah,
of times.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, that's some really weird shit going on yeah. over there. Like the guy we saw with the hooks in his
that's
back.
Right. That's
and he
right.
was being literally hung like a piece of meat.
Right. From fish hooks.
From fish hooks. Big, giant. And he was hanging.
Yeah.
And you could see the skin, like
yeah.
That was
a bit much.
You know that, but that's his thing,
right?
So, should we have told? You know, should they have said, "No, you can't do this in the dungeon"? It, you know, if we go by your, you know, I'll go by my rule, and you tell them you're going to do this ahead of time, and they say yes, then you can do it.
There are some event coordinators or dungeon monitors who will really set up a whole space for you.
Yeah.
Within an environment
but
like
he was
that.
Right smack dab in the middle of
he
the,
was.
He was right
yeah.
in the middle there.
Yeah, he was.
And you didn't see, you know, all you see from the front is just sort of hanging there. I'm like, well, I remember myself. I said, huh, how is he just hanging there? So in the Not because I was terribly interested, but because I was walking around, because they usually have dungeons set up in like some sort of like a square,
right,
or a circle or an oval, so that there's a path.
Right.
And it's kind of like you're walking around convention space. There's always like a path. And I turn around and I come, you know, parallel to him, and I'm coming behind him, and I'm just like,
yeah,
you know, like my mouth drops open. And it's like train wreck.
It was a real shock to see it.
You didn't want to look, but you couldn't look away.
Now, we've seen blood play. We've seen all different kinds of things. But for some reason, this particular scenario, this guy being hung by fish hooks in his back, that was a bit much.
And he didn't look like he was in any sort of terrible pain.
Right.
Which led me to believe he's done this before.
Right.
For all we know, that could have been a piercing. Yeah. That could have been kept open, those, and healed.
Who knows? Right.
You know, like earrings.
Right.
You know, you do heal, and then you can switch out your earrings and put different earrings in. So, different piercings. So, for all we know, you know, that could have been what he was doing.
True.
Because it wasn't bloody or anything either, which also leads me to believe that those were that was permanent.
Yeah.
Because you would think if you were going to hang a guy on fish hooks, that there would be some blood.
Right, right.
So
I think the blood comes after, you know, is part of the after the scene kind of thing when they remove them. But
sure,
I could be
maybe
wrong. I don't know.
Yeah.
I those kinds of things really are very intense. But when you go into an event, I mean, you have all these papers you sign ahead of time, you know, liability, all this kind of stuff. And you are told and you know that there's going to be extreme stuff going on. There's no question about it. You don't like it, you have to turn away. You have to just turn around and go in another direction. Unless, of course, you know, the dungeon monitor or the event coordinators have set up a space. And you'll see that for extreme medical play or blood play, that the space has been draped off. So that, you know, it is.
Especially medical blood play.
Yeah.
They'll actually hang curtains.
Right.
Or get those partitions.
Right.
And they put like tablecloths or plastic
drapes.
You know, drapes.
Yeah.
So that if there is any sort of splatter or migration of blood,
right,
that it doesn't fall into and affect the general space.
Right. And there are some forms of blood play that look a lot worse than they are. There's no question about it. So it does upset some people who are not used to it or don't expect to see it. Okay. So a lot of times it is off to the side, as they say.
I just remembered something that you had just told me. I think we should take just a few minutes at the end of this episode to discuss. I remember you telling me that there was a scene that you witnessed where they were beating the crap out of your friend.
Yeah.
I mean, they were just like punching her and she would pass out and they would revive her.
That's right. Yeah.
That to me is extreme.
Yeah.
That is definitely an edge play type of thing. That was not your simple flogging or a little whipping or some caning. They were literally assaulting and beating the crap out of her.
And what's interesting about that is that it seemed to be okay with her, but not okay with the people who were watching the scene who were friends of hers.
Mm.
And two of those people were very upset and went to a dungeon monitor and had the scene stopped. And afterwards, a while afterwards, when we were all sitting around talking about this particular thing, this woman who had been in that scene, who was the, you know, the bottom in that scene, was very upset that the scene had stopped.
Mm.
Okay. And you wonder to yourself,
what's that about?
Yeah, what's that about? What's that about? And the consensus from the people who were watching the scene, her friends and whatever it was, definitely stepped over the line. The guys who were doing this, and there were more, of course, there were more than two of them. I think there were three of them, actually, really were stupid in doing this. She had had surgery, maybe a month prior to this. And she was not in the best condition, okay? And these were not people who she just picked up off the street to come in and beat the shit out of her. These were people she knew. And they knew her circumstance, her scenario. And that they did what they did, I think, was really, really bad. And everybody who was watching it, the gals, you know, part of her circle, were just very, very upset by the whole thing, and that she didn't stop it. Nobody else stopped it. And they had to go to the DM and have it stop.
I mean, the fact that she lost consciousness.
Right.
That should have stopped the scene.
That's right. And it should also have given anybody watching that scene a good example of who not to play with. In terms of the future, I think it was very irresponsible of them, extremely. And bad scenes do happen, even if there are dungeon monitors. And again, when we're talking about edge play, when we're talking about societal taboos and playing within that environment, bad things can happen. Be forewarned. That's all. Be forewarned. And maybe it will take whispering in somebody's ear every 15 minutes or so. Are you sure this is okay? Are you okay with all this? How are you doing?
Implicit consent.
Absolutely. Are you okay with this? On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being, I went out of here. How do you feel? You're a 6? Okay, you can take more. Whatever. Okay? So maybe you need to do that. Maybe you need to check in more often. Or perhaps the bottom says, don't check in with me because then you're going to ruin my headspace. Or something along those lines. This is very complicated question. Issue. People are complicated. This is a complex subculture we belong to. And just because my kink's okay, that doesn't mean that your kink is okay too. Generally speaking, if you don't hurt anybody else, if you don't do things to people that are non-consensual, when there is no implied consent, or when you are not rack-aware, rack being, what is that?
Risk-aware consensual kink.
Risk-aware consensual kink. If you have not signed on to risk-aware consensual kink, then that's not a place for you. It just really, really isn't. So I guess what we're saying is this is a warning. This is a description. This is a role play. This is a fun subject. This is an intense subject. This is something we don't want to do. This is something we do. It's like everything else that we come up against in the scene.
We are told not to do it, but we want to do it.
Right.
Or we're afraid if we do it and we like it, what does that say about us?
Absolutely.
As human beings?
Right.
So that's why we wanted to just have a conversation about this, these difficult topics, these difficult types of play, things I didn't even know existed, like gunplay. I didn't even know that was a thing. So I'm glad that we had a chance to hopefully give you some education, give you some information, give you some ideas about, hey, maybe it is okay if I try this. Or if I do this, or, you know, I'd really like to try this.
Right. Or I've seen it at an event, and boy, would I like to do that. And then, of course, there are things you see in events you'll never want to do. I can remember one event I went to. I think it was down in Washington. I'm not sure, but I think it might have been. And in any event, there was a particular woman in the scene who was very, very well known for extreme, extreme psychological edge play. And this meant that there wasn't anything that couldn't been done to her. And it was her husband who was checking everything out and making sure that no real harm was done to her physically, because they did very, very extreme things. She was on an 8-foot platform, and they had set up a vaginal probe that was something like 6 feet high. And what they were doing with ropes was lifting her on and off this gigantic dildo, essentially. And let me tell you, people were freaked out. They were totally freaked out. However, people who knew them, knew this couple, knew that this is what they did. This is the kind of thing that they did. There had been an extraordinary humiliation scene with her at a summer camp event. And she was known for doing this kind of thing. Some people could not watch the kinds of things that were being done to her, primarily humiliation, and had to walk away from it. Yet, she was very well known in the scene. It was a real big thing to go to an event and go watch them or go listen to their presentation. It was very, very, very edgy. No question about it.
Well, I think that wraps up this episode. We certainly gave you enough to think on. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at tkw@twokinkywomen.com. That's the numeric 2. Sign up for the email newsletter. Get your free downloadable beginner's guide to kink. It tells you everything you need to know to get started in this wonderful kinky fuckery.
Yep.
And we just want to say thank you to our listeners and our subscribers. You can find us at our homepage at twokinkywomenpodcast.com. That's a numeric 2. Read the diary and download the free infographic, which comes available with every month.
Sign up.
Yeah. We are Two Kinky Women, and we want you to be kinky too.
Safely and sanely. Bye-bye.
Bye.